Hello, hello. Welcome to another episode of Dinner with a Side of Sci-Fi. I'm Jason.
And I'm Deva.
Today, we are sipping cocktails in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean and discussing Breakfast of Champions. So what are you drinking today, Deva?
So it's about 10:30 a.m., maybe 10:45. So Breakfast of Champions. Well, I didn't get a daiquiri, or
Martini.
I didn't get a martini, but I did get a pina colada, a frozen pina colada. It's pretty good. What are you drinking? Bloody Mary?
I'm having a Bloody Mary. It's still morning for me. I'm not sure if I'm ready for all the sugar.
Well, and the martinis on the ship are kind of like, they don't have like a proper martini. I guess I could ask for one.
Yeah.
But I prefer, like, I need to have a blue cheese olive in there. So it's not worth it to me unless I have that. So I've been mostly drinking Trulies and sparkling wine.
Now, am I to understand that you guys drank all of the ship's Trulies last night?
That's right. We went to the club on the 11th floor and we were just ordering Trulies, a truly great experience. And they're like, "I'm sorry, this is the last Truly." So I was like, "I think that's a good indication that it's bedtime."
Absolutely. Yeah, I went to bed earlier. I went to bed around midnight, I think. But it was fun. We had a day in Bermuda, which is why we chose today's book. Today's book is Breakfast of Champions. So I'm going to go ahead and do the summary. We're not cooking a meal, so we'll just do the summary and then go into the discussion.
Sounds good.
Okay, cool. Breakfast of Champions is the story of Kilgore Trout. Kilgore Trout was introduced in Slaughterhouse-Five, the book we did in early season two, or was it season one? It was a while ago.
It was a while ago.
It was a while ago. So Kilgore Trout was just a side character that you never actually really meet in Breakfast of Champions. But, sorry, in Slaughterhouse-Five. But in Breakfast of Champions, Kilgore is the protagonist, so we get to follow him, and he's an interesting guy. Kilgore is a science fiction author that never really knew fame. All of his books were published in Wide Open Beaver magazines, which were 70s porn, apparently. And, they would just insert porn pictures between the chapters. So he never actually could get a copy of his books unless he went to adult bookstores and bought copies. Sometimes they were also printed in panty magazines, because apparently that was also a thing at one point. Men of the past were super risque. So Kilgore ends up getting invited to be the guest of honor at the Midland City Arts Festival. He was recommended by the protagonist of Slaughterhouse-Five, who is not in the book, but is mentioned often throughout, because his family's money and wealth are often topics of our decaying societies, sort of, A lot of social commentary kind of
Wait,
threaded
was
throughout the
that
book.
Elliot Rosewater? Was he the protagonist
Yeah.
of
Well,
Slaughter?
Elliot Rosewater was the protagonist.
He's the one who went to Dresden
Trelfalmador.
and stuff.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, I forgot that was his name.
Yep.
That
More
makes
sense
sense now.
now? Yes. And the book has a secondary character, Duane Hubley, who is a car sale. He owns a car dealership, and Duane's life is sort of on cloud nine, with the exception of the fact that of him losing his wife several years earlier.
To suicide.
Yeah, to suicide. So throughout the book, Kilgore goes through a number of ordeals in order to get to Midland City, and Duane's mental health continually deteriorates. And ultimately it culminates with Hughley meeting Kilgore at a bar or a restaurant and speed reading, because Kurt Vonnegut thought it would be convenient for him to be able to read the book in one quick sitting. Speed reading through one of Kilgore's books and immediately believing that the book is true and that he is the only person on Earth with free will and everyone else are robots. And that is why his wife killed herself, because she's a robot that was designed to kill herself, and everyone else has to fill their little niches in society. And he decides there's no moral fault for hurting other people because they're not real anyway. And Kilgore ends up stopping the fight by pouncing on him from behind. He gets his finger bit off and gets taken in a converted school bus because it's a mass casualty incident. And the book ultimately concludes with Kurt Vonnegut himself talking to Kilgore, telling him how he basically made Kilgore's life awful, but then told him that Kilgore's life would be nice from now on. So, and the book sort of leaves with Kurt Vonnegut leaving Kilgore asking to be made young again.
So, yeah, that was, this was an interesting book.
Mm-hmm.
It felt kind of like a brain dump to me. Like, just Kurt Vonnegut was like, we brain dump all these, like, kind of stream of consciousness ideas into this book.
You know, so Kurt Vonnegut wrote this book as himself to himself as a 50th birthday present.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that it really, he focuses very heavily on backstory for characters, even side characters. And he sort of, in a meta way, comments on this because at the restaurant, there's actually a woman that talks about how good she is at creating backstories for characters. You know, so they talk about that. Kurt Vonnegut inserts himself into the book several chapters before the end. So for several chapters, he's actually, it's being written from his perspective, watching it happen and play out. And apparently he can only sort of control what's happening because there's a certain level of inertia. So, like, if someone is throwing a punch, he can't make a miss because it's already been done. And things like that.
Yeah, that, I mean, that makes sense because Slaughterhouse-Five was semi-autobiographical anyway. So it's just a weird melding of narrator and author and
it was.
Protagonist. I kind of was a little turned off by how crass a lot of the book was.
Very crass.
It was very crass. And I listened to most of it.
Yeah.
And there's a part where it's like 20 minutes of penis sizes of different men and like waist sizes
and
waist, of women.
And bust sizes of women. So like, so he, so throughout the book, Kurt Vonnegut gives summaries of Kilgore Trout novels. And in one of the novels, there is a company that starts every advertisement with an average. So, you know, you could say, you know, the average whatever is, you know, the average person's shoe size is X. And one of the ads was the average penis size. So at that point, he gives every male character that's introduced penis size, including his own, which is unusually like, short and girthy.
Like 5 inches in diameter or something?
Yeah, it was like a really wide, but only like 3.5 inches long. Yeah. And, yeah, it was very crass. You know, I did think, though, so I was a little, I had forgotten all the racism.
Yeah, it was There's a lot of racism.
Because, and I did realize towards the end, though, so when Dwayne is sleeping with his front desk lady,
mm-hmm.
she reflects on the fact that she knows he's mentally ill because he's being racist.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that it sort of, it was used to illustrate that this was not the normal character for this guy, and it also kind of recognized that this was not acceptable behavior.
Yeah.
You know, so, but it was very sexist and very crass.
I did like all the Kilgore Trout summaries of all the different stories, like the automobile planet that was, you know, the creatures there were automobiles that, you know, ate gas and they were dying because they ate all their gas. And there was these little tiny, tiny creatures that were visiting there. And then they brought that knowledge to Earth. And we're like, oh, that's a pretty good idea. We should make cars.
I also like the aliens that communicated only with farting and tried to alert the family that their house was burning down. There was a lot of
that's interesting because that's exactly like the language into Sleep in a Sea of Stars, like scent language.
Oh, true. Probably more pleasant, though.
Yeah, yeah.
And subtle, hopefully. Yeah, so it was, you know, there's a lot about the book was experimental. So did you, since you listened to most of the book, did you look at any of the PDF attachments?
I did look at the pictures, yeah. And so John Malkovich read the one I had.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which was great.
That was great. I loved him describing the drawings.
Yeah, and then he'd be like, and it's a picture of a woman's open leg.
Yeah.
With her beaver.
Yeah, throughout the book, he would mention things, and he would then draw a little picture of it so as a reference point. So a lot of the book felt like he was writing it to the future, because he would mention a subject, and then he would kind of give a very satirical description of it. You know, so, like, political parties were things where people did X.
Yeah.
You know, like, and so throughout the book, he explains what things are, even though the audience would already know.
And that took me out of the moment a little bit, just when he was explaining very obvious things.
Yeah.
It was like, okay, brah, I know. But I thought it was interesting how Dwayne was, like, going crazy and, like, no one really noticed at first.
Mm-hmm.
That was interesting, hearing his backstory.
And it's fun because, you know, they talk about the, what was the name of the cave? There's a cave in Midland City that's a tourist attraction, and through one of the waterways leading into the cave all of the toxic chemicals of this plastic plant are slowly filling the cave up with these little balls that are filled with toxic gas. And but I went to a cave yesterday.
You did, didn't you? Go to Crystal Caves?
I went to Crystal Caves in Bermuda, and it was fun. There was not a single ball of toxic gas floating in the water.
Was it crowded? Were there a lot of people on the tour?
Two busloads.
That was the only one that didn't get canceled.
Yeah.
So it's been raining, like, the whole time we've been on this cruise.
And you slept through the super crazy rocking.
What was that?
This morning, it was so bad it woke me up. Like, it was, the ship was tilting 4 degrees in either direction.
I woke up. And I kept falling in and out of sleep. But the rocking is definitely, I'm having a hard time sleeping with it.
Yeah. Well, last night I slept through this, but one of the guys that's sharing the room with us said that he felt the stabilizers kick on the ship.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So like this.
Oh, is that what those were? I didn't hear.
Yeah. So like apparently the waves were so big that they had to slow our descent down the wave.
Wow.
Yeah.
We went through
a tropical storm, I think.
Today?
That's what this whole thing was, I think.
Oh.
We're out of it now. But it was rainy in Bermuda the whole time. Everyone's excursions got canceled. The pool deck was closed.
I think the pool is still closed right now, the adult pool.
No, that's just because it opens late.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, there's kids swimming in the big pool.
Yeah, we still did our excursion on Tuesday or Monday in the rain. It was really fun.
Yeah, it was nice. Horseshoe Beach, which is the famous pink beach of Bermuda, had no one at it because it was raining. So, I mean, yes, it wasn't an ideal beach day, but we did sort of have it to ourselves.
Mm-hmm. I still went swimming.
Yes. And there was a cave, and there was sea life.
And a spider crab, and a big blue fish.
And a bunch of other fish.
Is that what those little things
look? Yeah, those things that look like trilobites. Those were kind of cool.
So, you've read Breakfast of Champions before, right?
I did. I went through a Kurt Vonnegut phase where I binge-read a bunch of stuff. And what's neat is... So this book becomes a turning point for Kilgore Trout, who pops up in subsequent books. And in
future... Is he younger?
No, he's always older. He's the same age he is now. And basically, this point is a turning point for him, and he becomes notable.
Mm.
So in God Bless You, Mr... It's not Rosewater, that's the guy from Slaughterhouse-Five. But there's another book where Kilgore becomes the advisor to this guy. And because he likes his book so much, there's another book where Earth gets stuck in a time loop and Kilgore's the only one that's aware.
Wow, that sounds like half of the Star Trek episodes.
Well, this one was strange because it was a 15-year time loop and everyone just was trapped in their bodies repeating what happened for the last 15 years.
Mm.
And he's the only one that has the ability to move around still. So like he could just walk into restaurants and take things because everyone's just on autopilot.
No, oh, okay.
And yeah, when the loop ends, everyone's confused because they've been running on autopilot for so long.
So then they know that they're, like, are they aware that they're repeating it or they're just doing it?
They're aware, but it's like 15 years of being aware.
And they can't,
change anything. Oh, so God. They just sort of go into like hibernation mode.
That's weird.
So like when it comes out of it, like there's car accidents and all sorts of stuff happens because nothing's happening automatically anymore.
Wow, that sounds interesting.
Yeah, it was a good one.
What's that one called?
That one is Tomorrow and Tomorrow and Tomorrow.
Yeah, I wasn't crazy about Breakfast of Champions.
Yeah, once I started, I forgot how crass it was. And once I started talking about penis sizes and women's cup sizes.
You're like, David's not
I was like, David's not going to like this book.
David doesn't like crass talk. How old were you when you went through your Kurt Vonnegut phase?
I was in my 20s, I think.
20s, okay. Because I can see how, like, if I was a teenager, I'd probably be like, oh my God, this is so edgy and, like, cool. And, like, it still is, you know, it's Kurt Vonnegut. But it just seemed like if it wasn't Kurt Vonnegut, this wouldn't have been. And I don't think they would have necessarily published this if he wasn't
right.
Kurt Vonnegut.
I think that was the door. 1 second. You're just in time for about the wrap up.
Okay.
Our friend Stacy just came into the room to listen.
Oh, and you got food.
She brought me gluten-free rolls.
And butter.
Wow, where'd you get those from?
From the
Windjammer.
Windjammer.
Yeah, those are the buns for the burgers.
Are they open right now?
They're transitioning over to lunch, but people are still in
there. Oh, okay, so. Cool.
Cool. So, David did not like it. I still thought it was fun. I thought that the mechanic of Kurt Vonnegut basically, if you think about it, the whole book is engineered so that he could have a conversation with Kilgore Trout.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And And he kind of gets to make his character's life better. He created this character that was just a constant, like, miserable, very Job-like, and says, your life will be better from now on, and you'll be recognized for all of your talent.
Well, thank you, Kurt Vonnegut.
Right.
For improving Kilgore Trout's life.
Right. You know,
Kilgore Trout was very prolific, too.
Yeah.
He's had a lot of books.
None of which were published in anything other than porn magazines. Yeah.
You know, it's funny because, like, Playboy did used to publish sci-fi stories.
Oh, yeah?
In the 50s. So, Isaac Asimov actually had a couple stories in Playboy.
Right.
And I actually had a collection of short stories that were in a Playboy magazine.
That's fun.
And it was just the short stories. And they were, you know, they were pretty, they were just normal sci-fi stories. But they would describe the woman a little bit. Like, oh, the woman was wearing a gauzy shirt that clung to her breasts. You know, and then it'd be the sci-fi story.
Well, Kilgore did write one romance novel, they mentioned, where he took the son of another fictional character written by someone else and made him a prolific lover that was so good in bed that he ends up becoming president of the world because all the women vote for him. Yeah.
Yeah, I could see that happening. That's what women care about.
That's what I thought, too. I was like, I don't really see Kilgore Trout as being the most enlightened individual.
Well, and Kilgore Trout was like, oh, I have an idea. He's going to write the story.
Right. And
it, like, no filter, no.
And it constantly mentions that he has no understanding of technology and he doesn't understand scientific concepts.
Yep. Hmm. Which is funny because the book was like most science fiction authors, he had no concept of science.
Right. But he did acknowledge that, you know, Kurt Vonnegut did acknowledge that we all just sort of accept the gravity of the thing, even though we don't really understand how it works.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's how politicians are elected, right?
Yeah. Cool. So, I guess that was it for Slaughterhouse-Five.
Did you think about Kilgore Trout at all while we were in Bermuda?
I did. I was thinking, I'm a bird person. So Kilgore Trout was born in Bermuda. And throughout the book, it references the fact that he was born in Bermuda. And it makes reference to an extinct bird in Bermuda regularly.
The urn.
And, you know, so I was paying attention to all the different bird species while I was on the island and looking them up and seeing what they were. And so I was thinking about that. And then the other thing that they talk about a lot is that Kilgore Trout calls mirrors leaks because he thinks they look like a gateway to another dimension. And, you know, my favorite joke about, and he tells people that that's what people in Bermuda call them. And, you know, and who's going to question him because it's the 1970s.
Yeah, no one's
been to Bermuda.
Yeah.
At least that he's encountering. And, but my favorite line in the book was that, you know, whenever someone says that they're going to take a leak, he'd say, where I come from, that means you're going to steal a mirror.
We did see a lot of little birds, like little there's a lot of chickens, like wild chickens in Bermuda with little, and they all had their babies.
Yes.
So they were all just super cute and just.
Apparently poisonous.
Yeah, diseased. So don't eat them. But we even, like, they had a little pink bus that you could just take pictures with and hop on. It was like an ad for something. And we hopped on there and then all these little angry baby chickens came streaming out from underneath of it. So we disturbed them to get our picture. Yeah, it was super cute. Like, all my pictures are of, like, baby chickens.
Aw. Yeah. I have several, too.
And the ducks on the beach.
And I didn't take any pictures of the ducks. I did. Growing up, I had stenciled mallard ducks around the perimeter of my bedroom. Because my mom liked ducks. And I was so happy when I was allowed to paint over them. I mean, it was beautiful. She did stenciling all around the room, but
mallard ducks in
a teenage boy's room.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I think that was about all I had to say about Breakfast of Champions. I also like the name. I like how he kind of ripped off Wheaties and, like, he's like, oh, this has nothing to do with Wheaties.
And they're fine cereal.
So there's a waitress in the book that whenever she hands someone a martini, she goes, Breakfast of Champions.
Until she gets called on it.
Yeah, and then she's like, I don't remember what she said.
Yeah, I don't either.
And thank you, Stacey, for joining us for the last half of our special edition podcast from the middle of the Atlantic.
Bye.
Bye.